Welcome to Stories of Stories. I'm your host, Mike Chin. In each edition of this podcast, I explore the stories behind a specific creative project, process, or experience. I'll be talking about projects on this show with the expectation that either you're already familiar with the project I'm talking about, so for example, if it's a story, you've already read it, or you don't plan to read it. Regardless, what I'm trying to get at is this podcast will include all kinds of spoilers, so please listen no further if you don't want anything spoiled. In this episode, I'll be discussing Finishers, which is a short story that was published right at the turn of the year from 2015 into 2016, so I think the official date on it was in 2015. So this is a short story that was in many ways inspired by and influenced by the novel Brief and Wondrous Life of Oscar Wao by Junot Diaz. This is the book that he won a Pulitzer Prize for. I think it was his first actual full-fledged novel. He published widely and very successfully with short fiction, but his first cohesive novel. There's a lot that really kind of influenced me about this book. I read it in the context of a first-person narratives class in my MFA program. The voice definitely was really key to me. It's a very informal voice. The character it's portraying has this really interesting dynamic of being really bright and clearly being into some pretty nerdy things, but trying to project an image to the world and even to the readers who he's kind of talking to, that he's cooler than he actually may be, or that he's not into these nerdy things. Kind of my go-to example in illustrating that is, so this character is put in direct interaction with the title character, Oscar Wao, who does things like write elvish messages on the door of their college dorm room to welcome people, you know, in. And this narrator, kind of insults this, you know, talks about how ridiculous it is, but at the same time, it's evident that he recognized the elvish, that he himself has actually read the Tolkien and is able to, you know, parse that out. So it's sort of an interesting little experiment there, and kind of in someone who is trying to project a certain image of himself, but also clearly has a lot more going on in his interior that isn't directly coming across, and kind of keeping that up over the course of a whole novel, I think, is one of the reasons why that's a really great book. But in reading it, there's this one detail, actually, I guess kind of a pair of details, but I'll address one of those details first. This one detail that really kind of caught my attention, and I think may have been the germ of thinking about the short story Finishers. And it's this one scene where some characters are talking about, you know, standing on a bridge. A character is contemplating suicide. I won't spoil, you know, any more about the novel. And I actually, to be fair, I don't remember all of the particulars, even, you know, having read it for over a year now. But in any event, there's a moment in kind of contemplating all this and talking about it when it was discussed, this idea of, you know, jumping off the bridge and an 18-wheeler coming across at the same time and hitting the body as it went down, and that, you know, really doing someone in. And the funny thing is that there's that detail that sticks out so vividly in my mind as being something these characters were, you know, contemplating, but it doesn't actually occur in the book. I was reading the book in a slightly distracted state, and I remember just reading that little piece of it and then going back and rereading, as I often do if I'm not sure I'm really understanding something correctly, and realizing that I really misread that scene, and that the reference that I was caught up on of that kind of, you know, double means of doing oneself in actually wasn't in the book, really. But it stuck with me as an idea, and I'll come back to why that was important here. But that connected with one other moment in A Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wao, in which there are all of these different kind of pop culture and more specifically kind of nerd culture references embedded throughout the book. And it does turn to professional wrestling at a certain point. And there's a description of someone 3D-ing someone through a table, which for wrestling fans will recognize that as the Dudley Death Drop, later revised due to some copyright issues to the Deadly Death Drop. But in any event, it's a signature move used by a tag team known as the Dudley Boys, or later the Dudley Brothers, or Team 3D, depending on which company they're working for at a time. In any event, it's a move that very specifically requires two wrestlers to do it. And when it's referenced in the Junot Diaz novel, it's actually referenced as just one wrestler doing it. And it stuck out to me because I think one of the reasons why this book is so cool and it can connect with such an interesting and wide audience is that there are all these kind of intricate references that land just kind of the right way. And this is actually one of the very few points when I think the novel doesn't hit, when I think it actually gets the reference kind of wrong. And it's funny to me that I don't think anyone really calls Junot Diaz on it, A, because Junot Diaz is a genius, but B, because I don't think much of his reading audience really has the knowledge of the wrestling product to be able to say anything critical about that. So I consider myself kind of, in a privileged few to kind of dip my toes in both waters of both being a wrestling fan and someone who was enjoying this novel. But in any event, that got me thinking about, what if I did write something that was more honed in on the wrestling end of it and kind of displaying this nerdy knowledge that I've accumulated over a lifetime. And that very specific image of, someone jumping off a bridge and to get hit by a truck, at the same time that they're falling to their death. And these pieces really connected for me and kind of starting to shape this very specific character of Slauson. People who listen to the podcast, people who know me know that I've been a wrestling fan pretty much my whole life. And I had published one short story concerned with wrestling before this called Going Home. And I may still do an episode of the podcast about that story at some point. It's actually the first story I ever got accepted for publication. And so one that's pretty special to me. But after writing that story, I more or less put wrestling aside for my serious writing projects. It would inevitably kind of surface in some, one-off reference of someone watching it or someone, referring to Hulk Hogan or something or other. But on the whole, I really kind of thought, this is something I'm really interested in, but there is this stigma around it in the general public. Why impose that challenge on myself as a writer? Obviously, as a writer, you want to connect with people, with readers, with editors and publishers. And so, automatically putting in something that is going to be a turnoff, that doesn't really help your case very much. But reading this book, Brief Wonders Life, Oscar Wow, I feel like in some ways it gave me permission to think about writing about wrestling again, because here was a guy who was, one of the most respected short story writers in the world, who won a Pulitzer Prize for writing a novel that concerns itself with all of these Lord of the Rings references and Star Wars references and, even that one professional wrestling reference. And I thought, it was something that I could write about, something that I was nerdily into, that was sort of a relatively niche market. And it also gave me permission to write about someone who was, people who are fans, rather than about the practitioners of something. I think when you think about, a short story that concerns itself with professional wrestling, the first temptation is to think you're going to write about the wrestlers. And that has been done, and that is something that I'm still, toying with in my own work. But it also gave me, kind of the idea of, like, there's this whole subculture of people who are fans of this product, of which I'm very much a part. And I thought that could be a really interesting thing to write about. Being a wrestling fan can be kind of a sad and kind of a lonely thing. I think a lot of people, watch it when they're kids, especially, I grew up in a generation that was kind of tailor-made for that. I was, growing up in elementary school through the Hulk Hogan, glory years, when he was the All-American Hero and when he became a household name and the WWF kind of did its whole national expansion thing. And then was also, a teenager when, Steve Austin and The Rock came around and were, it was hip to like wrestling then as well. Not a lot of generations go through that dual period when, twice it's kind of approved and overwhelmingly popular, in their life to be a wrestling fan. But for the most of the rest of my life, it's been something that I've kind of been really self-conscious about. It's one of those things where you kind of make a choice around your fanhood. You can grow out of it, which may be the least conscious choice of it, but it could be a conscious thing if you just consciously choose to stop watching it. I think that's where probably a majority of wrestling fans fall in, of being fans when they're kids, and then putting it aside and not really watching it. Maybe here and there some headline grabs their attention, or they're flipping TV stations late at night and come upon it, but don't really follow it in any meaningful way. So you just kind of phase it out of your life. you know, otherwise there's this idea of closeting it, of kind of, you know, being a secret wrestling fan and as being something that you're really interested in, but aware that, you know, the general populace doesn't look so kindly on wrestling fans, think that it's, you know, if you watch wrestling, you must believe that the fix isn't in, that it's all real. And so you have some deficiency in intelligence, or, you know, thinking that there's, you know, something, you know, inherently kind of silly about, you know, watching grown men play fight with each other. And by no means am I calling it play fight, but I think that's kind of the stigma that can get attached to it. So there's all of these kind of pieces that can be attached to it. So it's very easy to kind of, you know, be secret about kind of that fanhood. And I would say that's how I spent, you know, my college years. That's how I spent, you know, a fair amount of my adult years after that, until, you know, through all sorts of variety of combination of circumstances, it kind of came out in different contexts that I was a fan, until I, you know, stopped hiding it altogether. And then there's that final grouping of people who are very openly pro wrestling fans. And that's something I've kind of hedged towards. I still kind of consider myself halfway in between, where, I don't just go around wearing professional wrestling t-shirts in public, but, I also don't, you know, make great pains to hide the fact that this is something I'm really interested in. You know, and if you come to my, home, you know, there's no hiding it, cause you'll see the books and the DVDs and whatnot. And, you know, and I will, you know, plan my social life around not missing, you know, a big event, you know, and those sorts of things. But in any event, you know, I consider myself kind of a fan, in a particular sense, in that, I write a lot about wrestling, you know, beyond my fiction. You know, I write a regular, you know, column about professional wrestling and you know, tweet about it and so on and so forth. But there are a lot of fans who don't have that kind of, you know, sense of productivity around it, so to speak, who are just fans for being fans' sake, which, there's obviously nothing wrong with. But you know, these are the people more who I think, you know, who I've always been wary of, people thinking who I was, which is kind of a weird double standard, something I always feel a bit weird about. But, you know, just this idea of, like, you know, the person who, you know, did just really is kind of the degenerate wrestling fan who just watches wrestling and, you know, is into the violence and is into the more misogynistic kind of parts that it traditionally encompasses, and aren't thinking really critically about it, or just, you know, just kind of fans for the sake of being fans without, you know, taking anything apart or analyzing it or so on and so forth. You know, and I think that's one of the trickiest places to be, because there actually is a budding community around that. I think the internet has really helped, people be more comfortable in their own skin around that, because there are so many people, who are wrestling fans out there who are, you know, Googling for wrestling news and spoilers and so on and so forth, that, you know, there's a community there. And so I don't think there's quite the same level of, you know, feeling in solitude around it that there once may have been. But in any event, so with this story, that's kind of the sort of character I was looking to encompass, but, telling the story from an earlier time period in life, before there was kind of that vibrant community on the internet, back when tape trading was a thing, which means, you know, not just, you know, YouTubing and Googling for videos and whatnot of old wrestling and wrestling from abroad, but actually trading VHS tapes of this stuff, which was a pretty vibrant, business model for much of the, you know, 1990s and probably into the 2000s even, that I very loosely participated in for, you know, a couple short spurts, but you know, never really meaningfully got into. But anyway, there's this character of Slauson, is a character, who's, you know, very decisively in the thick of this wrestling business. And, you know, and as he emerges, you know, from childhood into teenagehood, where most of the story takes place, you know, into young adulthood, isn't shirking away from it all. If anything, he's getting more and more involved with it, and more, you know, making it the central focus of his life. Where, as a counterpoint, the narrator of the story, is kind of a mix of someone who's outgrown the product, you know, doesn't really follow it with any sort of fervor anymore, but also kind of a closeted fan. And this is one of those points of overlap, or, you know, where I was, really inspired by Oscar Wao, is just this point of a character who, you know, kind of protests a bit too much, who seems like he's no longer a wrestling fan. He grew up with it, but now it's kind of something that's not cool and not something he's really into. But still kind of picks up on all these references and still, has some of the memorabilia, and kind of, you know, there are a lot of hints I tried to embed in there to show that he's more into it than he lets on, that, you know, once he was a fan, and he's always going to be a fan to some extent. So the story is largely about, you know, these two characters interacting over a number of discrete, you know, separate time periods. And it's, you know, wrestling is kind of a significant piece of it. But I think that the heart of the story definitely has more to do with just the friendship between these characters as young men, and more particularly young men of a certain generation who are growing apart, you know, who were really close at one point, and wrestling was definitely a central point of that, but who have kind of, you know, gone their separate ways in life. And by the end, the narrator, you know, is off to college while Slauson stayed home. You know, and Slauson is kind of getting, you know, more depressed and kind of sad and insular, while the narrator kind of has this own life that he's kind of moved on to. So in a lot of ways, as a story, you know, it definitely superficially is about wrestling, but I think, you know, the heart of it also is largely about, you know, friendship between these young men, and how these friendships, you know, change and evolve and work in the long term. So I wrote this story coming out of a winter term during my MFA program, and then turned it in for workshop, for the first workshop of the spring. And it was actually, you know, turned in for workshop less than 48 hours after I was in attendance for WrestleMania 31. And, you know, a lot of people in my MFA program had kind of gotten that I was a wrestling fan by that point. You know, again, I was, you know, tweeting about it and occasionally making Facebook posts around it, and, you know, didn't hide it as much as I didn't necessarily advertise it at first. But there, you know, this was in some ways kind of, I felt like, my coming out party, for being a wrestling fan, in my MFA program, was, a fully fledged story that dealt heavily with the topic. And there's also a certain irony, you know, I mentioned that story earlier of going home. That was the, you know, wrestling story I previously published. And interestingly enough, that was the story that I had brought into a workshop at my previous program at Johns Hopkins, right before embarking to WrestleMania 25. So it was sort of interesting that 6 years later, there I was in an MFA program, similarly on my way to WrestleMania, or in this case, coming right back from WrestleMania, but with a story set for workshop about that. So the workshop was under the direction of Nick Dybeck that term, who was, you know, one of the full-time faculty at Oregon State. And I felt really fortunate to have him as a reader for this story, because he was a, you know, childhood wrestling fan, and, you know, just a few years older than me. And, you know, him and a couple other people in workshop had kind of similar backgrounds of being, in some ways sort of like the narrator of this story, that they were, you know, people who had at one time, you know, been fans, who kind of understood wrestling and its appeal, but, you know, weren't really, you know, following it now, you know, and weren't actively following storylines or going out of their way to watch anything. So I think that these people, Nick in particular, were kind of my ideal audience for reading this, especially in a workshop context. Because ideally, I'd want for a story like this to work for a broader literary audience, not just wrestling fans. That's obviously a pretty niche market, just, you know, literary readers who are also wrestling fans. I'd like for it to have, you know, the kind of that crossover appeal to both audiences. So, you know, people, you know, like Nick, who had some frame of reference but weren't entrenched in it like me and could call me out on when I was kind of getting, you know, too far lost into my own, you know, kind of gibberish about wrestling, was super valuable for this project. So, you know, turned it in, had a really warm reception from the workshop. Obviously, as always, there were, you know, a lot of suggestions for revision and, you know, points for me to look at and questions, which is why workshop is, you know, so valuable. But at the same time, it was also a really encouraging workshop, because none of those questions or, you know, issues, or very few of them at least, were fundamentally attached to the premise of it centering so much on wrestling. But rather, I think that people thought it worked, because it was so different than, you know, anything that I'd been turning in up to that point. And because it reflected, you know, my personal knowledge there, which is something you can't really replicate. And so that's, you know, a lesson I feel like I've learned time and time again, but I think was particularly clear through this particular process of, you know, leaning into, you know, my personal passions. Because there's, you know, a lot of stories out there to be told that I want to tell, but the ones that are unique to me, the ones that only I could tell, obviously that's a pretty specific advantage I have in telling those stories. So like most stories I'd worked on while I was in my MFA program, particularly ones that I took seriously and brought in through the workshop process, I figured I would just kind of put that story aside and let it cool, and then months or maybe years even later, go back to it, with all the workshop letters and the notes I'd taken from the conversation, and review it and hopefully revise and get to a point where I could send it out for publication somewhere. But very shortly afterwards, like not more than a month or so after that workshop, another one of the faculty at Oregon State, who knew I was a wrestling fan and had come out, in another class I'd taken, Elena Passarello, forwarded me this call for submissions, for an anthology called Working Stiff, which was going to be an anthology, with all work that centered around professional wrestling. And it was sort of a strange spot because I had this story here that I thought had a lot of potential, and I thought I could send out some serious journals down the line. And I wasn't quite sure what to make of this anthology, if this was going to be a really serious project, or if this was more just kind of a kind of lark for an editor who was into wrestling, and wouldn't be taking that seriously. But by the same token, as much as I had a couple inhibitions around it, I was also thinking to myself that, if there was going to be this literary anthology about pro wrestling that came out while I was in an MFA program and while I had a story that I was proud of and that I thought was, while not kind of clicking on every cylinder, was getting there, was a very workable draft, and I had some good notes and ideas for a vision. It seemed like, kind of a foolish step to not send it in for such an anthology, and worst case scenario, I figured, if the editor didn't take it, then, I'd still have more time to work on it if I really were gonna, really, really polish it up and send it out to some, high profile places. But if they took it, then that would be great too, and I'd be happy to have my name included in an anthology like that. So I put in some revisions, some edits, particularly around the ending of the story, which had kind of got away from me a little bit and had been kind of overwritten and overextended. Really trimmed that down significantly, and it did end up getting accepted for the Working Stiff anthology. It's a really cool book. So again, it came out about half a year later. And it's this big, kind of oversized pages of this book. And, it still runs, somewhere in the neighborhood, like 400 pages or so. It's just a really cool kind of collection of, kind of, I think everyone who's actively writing about wrestling now. I'm sure not everyone, but, a lot of people, who dabble in this topic and showing how many of us there are, collected in this, one book. And I'm pretty proud to be a part of it. So that book came out through Gimmick Press, and it is available now on Amazon, maybe other booksellers as well by this point. But the anthology is called Working Stiff, and the story is called Finishers. Okay, so now we're going to move on to Mike's monthly endorsement. So as an artist, I do feel it's important to be consuming other things to see what interests and inspires you and to see what's already out there and see what's come before you. So at the end of episodes, I'm recommending a book, story, movie, TV show, band, wrestling match, etc. That may have escaped a huge mainstream audience or that might be a little dated now and on the cusp of being forgotten, but that I nonetheless recommend. So for this episode, I'm recommending The Dead Wrestler Elegies, which is a book by Todd Kaneko. The book is very literally what the title would suggest to you. It's a number of poems dedicated to wrestlers who have passed away. And as anyone who kind of follows wrestling and kind of culture at all, I think it's no secret that there's a lot of people who've lost their lives in wrestling prematurely. A lot of it, I think, is related to the lifestyle that wrestlers undergo, the amount of physical punishment that their bodies endure and all the touring. There'd be a lot of people who've been addicted to painkillers or have resorted to alcoholism or have had enough head and other body injuries that it really affects and shortens their lives. This is a really cool, I think, collection of poetry that really delves into a lot of wrestlers, and some of them discussing kind of the way that they went, but all the more so kind of getting down to the heart of what these wrestlers actually represented on some level or another. A lot of really great poems in there. In particular, there's one about Owen Hart, That kind of relates to the way that he passed and kind of life that he lived. But you know, he's a wrestler who pretty famously, live on a pay-per-view event, was involved in a stunt. His character was kind of portrayed as being someone who thought he was a superhero, even though he clearly wasn't, and was kind of goofy around that. But he's playing the Blue Blazer. And had this whole arrangement where he descended from the rafters of the building, on this line that he lowered himself through. There was some sort of malfunction, something broke down. He ended up plummeting to his death in front of this live audience. And so the really powerful poem that kind of captures that idea of flight and the idea of falling, I think is pretty great. And it's just one of, quite a few in that book by Todd Kaneko. So a really great read through and through, and a fitting one, I think, for when I'm talking about kind of literature, professional wrestling. I think this is, in my estimation, my humble opinion, I think one of the very best collections of literature around professional wrestling, this book of poetry. So in any event, it came out in 2014 from Curbside Press, available through all the online book retailers. Definitely worth a read for anyone who's interested, not only in wrestling, but I think this is very legitimately a great book of poetry. And I know that it's been taught in lots of poetry classes, which have nothing